Yeah, you've never seen Miss Marple.
I probably have, but, you know, I suspect I was probably doing something really violent with the other hand.
I'll note that down. He likes it violent, right?
Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 221. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me for this special law-abiding edition of the podcast, we have Peter, straight as a die, Wellington.
Hi.
And Keith, you ain't got nothing on me, you slags! Andrew.
That's how I'm commonly introduced, yep.
Yeah, well, I'm reading from your statement there. By the way, that old woman wants her handbag back because there were a couple of Jaffa cakes in there she hadn't gummy.
She can't because it matches my shoes, so.
Ooh! Oh, well, she'll be delighted to hear that. The superintendent, less so. So, you know, don't answer any.
You're really seeing this whole thing through, aren't you?
Yes, I've been researching this bit for weeks. How is everybody today?
I've got a cold.
If anyone was asking, that's me playing the loop that I have of Keith. We have a little bit of like a audio that we just play every week, which says, "I am Keith. I have a cold."
We should get one of those. We should make like money off of Pocket Gamer with like little apps, and one of them would be like a little soundboard of Keith, like just like I haven't played any games this week. I'm ill this week. I think people would pay 69p for that.
You're just trying to put me out of work. That's what you're doing.
No, we can make money off of you, Keith, and your misery. We can make money off of your misery.
We can prostitute your terrible diseases out for our own personal gain.
Exactly.
That's what friends are for.
Hmm.
Well, I do have enough of them. Yeah. This one's actually not bad, because I'm here. Usually if I have a bad one, I just don't turn up, do I? So.
That's true. Well, what have we got going on this week? We've got some legal things, sort of. The Office of Fair Trading are considering cracking down on in-app purchases. We've got news about XCOM and its journey from the PC to iOS, and why Star Command isn't going to be the game that Kickstarter backers thought they were getting. All that and more on this week's news. First things first, we'll do this week's update. Three games for you this week. Rayman Jungle Run, that lovely auto-runner from Pasta Games and Ubisoft, has been updated with 20 brand new levels. They've got flaming rocks to avoid, you've got boulders that roll down hills and all that, but most notably, you've got two kind of pursuit sections, one of which has a floating pirate galleon in the background, which is lobbing big bombs at you, and another one which has got a awesome-looking like mutant plant, which is chasing you down. And so you have to keep running, or it's going to creep up behind you and gobble you up, like Little Shop of Horrors style. And you can download that now. It should be out on iOS. When I wrote the story earlier today, it wasn't out, even though they said it was. But you're listening to this on Friday, maybe, so it's probably out by now. So go grab that, free of charge. You can also get a new update for Pixel People, which is, it's only been like weeks since the last update. They have some kind of really impressive work ethic over there. And they've added a bunch of new jobs. There's a few new buildings as well. The beach house, the carnival, the chemical plant. You can also unlock the bunny gene, presumably for splicing together with other people to make, I don't know, hopping mechanics. Or
What is the bunny gene? What does that do?
Well, I presume it has something to do with making you either jump very high, right, want to eat carrots, or make you want to rut everything in sight.
I've got that already.
Oh, you are. Is that you're the source of the bunny gene?
I think Keith definitely has, because I've seen Keith jump. I've seen him jump, and it's very high. It's very high.
Well, if you will keep coming behind me. Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, so you can also download that, bunny gene included, at your peril. And also, another one that keeps updating is The Simpsons. There's a new one for that, which has got extra characters, a bunch of snakes, apparently. Oh, it's the Whacking Day. Remember that episode with the Whacking Day, where they chase snakes with sticks and whack them?
Yes.
Yeah, they've done that. So you can now play that somehow. There's apparently 10 prizes you can win by thumping as many snakes as you can. You'll also be able to unlock Ninja Homer, Miss Springfield, Dredrick Tatum, God, that's horrible to say, and Lisa. She's not unlocked. Oh, no. Lisa, ready for gymnastics training. So it's like gymnastics Lisa. Like Kung Fu Ken and all those variations. Presumably it's another Lisa. Go and download those if you have any of those games. Crack on. Right. About law breaking and that. This is a piece of news that we haven't actually released on the site yet because it's embargoed until tomorrow. But being as tomorrow, from our point of view, is today from your point of view, listeners.
Wait, hold on, what?
We've gotten tied up in... You know, like, how Back to the Future, the DeLorean, right?
Yep, go on.
He goes back and he sees him, but it's not really him. It's him from the future. And right. So there's two places at the same time, but then it's a loop. And, okay. Oh, it's just out now. It's out now, Peter.
Okay, brilliant.
Hey, right, brilliant. Okay, the Office of Fair Trading, which is that consumer standards agency that looks after all of our best interests... that sounded sarcastic, but I did actually mean that. Is looking into mobile games, specifically the in-app purchases that are in mobile games. Even more specifically, in-app purchases that are directed at children. Exactly. They're concerned that these in-app purchases might be in breach of Office of Fair Trading regulations. The way that you breach these regulations is by making in-app purchases that either are perhaps too manipulative, they might be a little bit too persuasive. The way that they phrase it, actually, is that they say, it's illegal to make games which include direct exhortations to children. Which I particularly like that word. And in order to clarify that, what it means is games targeted at minors cannot contain strong encouragement to make a purchase.
Right.
They're also
just
forbidden.
Mild encouragement.
It is mild, yeah. It's a little bit, a gentle prod towards the in-app store. Specifically, they say that they're forbidden from creating mechanics which will necessitate making a purchase, on the one hand, or will direct kids to persuade their parents or other adults to make a purchase for them.
God, this is a bit convoluted, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's a bit twisty. Now, the person who we've got a statement from, which has got the best name in the world, Cavendish Ellithorne of the OFT.
Say that again, please, James.
Cavendish Ellithorne.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Which is either a name pulled from the pages of Tolkien or is someone who owns at least a quarter of West Shropshire. The statement says, we are concerned that children and their parents could be subject to unfair pressure to purchase when they are playing games that they thought were free, but which can actually run up substantial costs. Now then, this is presumably in reaction to a bunch of headlines we've seen recently where either young kids have been left on their own and they've run up thousands of pounds of bills by playing on their parents' iPads. And also, I mean, there's been a couple of stories relating to specific games. Like there was one for the My Little Pony game, which... they released it and everyone complained that the in-app purchases were cynically expensive, and so Gameloft turned around and then actually lowered the prices of those purchases accordingly, because clearly it's a game aimed at young kids.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, I reviewed that. Like, I reviewed My Little Pony.
You did, didn't you? Yes.
Now, that's the big problem, isn't it? Like, how do you define whether or not a game is aimed at kids? Because I'd argue that My Little Pony probably... a huge portion of the people who are spending money on it, i.e. the main target audience, are 20-year-old men.
You'd say it's the bronies.
let's play devil's advocate here. Like, the reason that My Little Pony saw a massive resurgence was because of brony fandom.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you say, oh, well, it's a game aimed at kids, well, it's clearly not, because... the main target audience is not children. But so how does Office of Fair Trading go, oh, okay, well, this game is categorically for children and this game is categorically for adults?
Well, I suppose they could lean on the actual ratings, but you're right in that a game that might have got a 4+ rating on the App Store because perhaps it has no violence or nothing that would be particularly negative for kids is not necessarily targeted at children.
I think the other issue here is they're kind of... attempting to make this point as a matter of principle, as in you shouldn't really target kids with these things. But what they're actually doing is that there's no mention here of them banning paid apps that are targeting kids. So you could have a paid app which, you know, through various forms of advertising and so forth, really entices kids to part with their cash. But for some reason, what they're actually saying is that the potential to make more money is in the freemium ones. So it's the amount of money that matters, not actually the way they're presenting it as it being a...
And this is...
Well, I would argue that by saying that adverts themselves are strictly heavily monitored as well. The Ofcom deal with that, especially for adverts that are done on kids' channels and things.
TV adverts. But, I mean, you can have press adverts or adverts like even on Pocket Gamer that are for apps that, you know, you could say are aimed at children. That, you know, they're enticing kids directly, because that's what adverts are for, to buy these apps.
No, but they are monitored, aren't they? I mean, you know about advertising. They do have to follow strict regulations and guidelines themselves.
That's what I'm saying, though, you see. So all adverts are monitored, so they can't literally... There's no monitoring on, I don't think... The only thing that's ever bothered bodies like this about advertising kids has been fast food. They've never really been bothered about anything else. So toys and stuff like that, they're not that fussed about. It was always the only thing they ever cracked down on was adverts for McDonald's and Coca-Cola and stuff during hours of TV children's channels and so forth. They've never really what the EFT kind of attempted to say here is that it's almost immoral to target these things at kids. But then they're making a further clarification that only if it's in-app purchases. So you could have an app that was $10.99. to paid, and you could get kids to buy that, you know, or buy it without their parents noticing, but that's fine. Seemingly it's just if you get them to get a free app that then has in-app purchasing, which I think makes the whole thing a bit dodgy, really.
And this, like, all of this news just shows how out of touch a lot of these regulatory bodies are. Like the fact that they're saying things like, oh, but it looks like this game is free. Like the fact that they don't understand that actually, no, software has moved on to a different business model now. Like, this is the way things work. Like, it shouldn't be about, oh, well, let's not advertise to kids, or let's figure out who it is that we should, you know, string up and say, oh, this is terrible. You know, you can't have this in-app purchase because this is a kids game. Instead of that, it should be a case of, well, maybe this isn't our area. Maybe it's the area of educating people who, you know, give devices. I mean, we've had this conversation 100 times, but maybe this is about, you know, educating the people who give children expensive devices that actually things cost money, or this is how you turn off in-app payments. You know, it's about education. It's not about saying, well, this brand can't do it, and this brand can't do it, and this age rating can't do it. It's pathetic.
In their defense, they say that they're not seeking to ban in-app purchases. That's not the idea. But the idea is that the games industry must ensure, I'm quoting, it is complying with the relevant regulations so children are protected. The idea is this isn't new regulations they've introduced for in-app purchases specifically or anything. These regulations have been around since 2008. The problem is that as in-app purchases are a relatively new thing, comparatively new to them anyway, that perhaps they haven't been aware of the market, or they haven't been applying the rules, or people haven't been applying the rules, developers haven't been applying the rules as well as they perhaps should. And I guess it's been highlighted through other things.
Yeah, it's a coincidence. It can't be a coincidence. It's taken them, the App Store launched in 2008, almost 5 years to think, oh, maybe some of these apps aren't doing what they should be doing.
To be fair, the last year has been the big explosion of in-app payments.
I mean, if the OFT is a serious body, it shouldn't need there to actually be a case for them to think we should probably give some kind of advisory on how this business model works. They should have just been there when in-app purchase launch and said, right, well, this is a new business model. You lot need to be aware that in the UK, you'll need to operate in this way. What seems to have happened is they're chasing their tail now, and that there's been a number of notable press stories about kids spending money, and now suddenly the OFT are thinking, oh, God, we should probably do something. We're looking a bit daft. Mm. I mean, knee-jerk like that is never a good way to make any policy.
No, I'd agree with you there. But presumably, in the same way that the App Store and even Google Play have a huge amount of difficulty trying to police the thousands upon thousands of apps that come through every single day, and the fact that the OFT is by no means simply limited to games and covers a far broader mandate, in terms of their policies. I imagine I wouldn't be surprised if it's taken them perhaps a little longer to get round to this.
Maybe. I don't know. I'll tell you what else bothers me. Is the their logo is of a set of balanced scales, but the actual letters aren't physically on the scales.
Cutting straight to the heart of the issue.
And yeah, and also
floating above the scales.
Also, the O, if it was on the scales, the O would totally outweigh the T.
Are you assuming there's mass in the middle of that?
Yeah,
O,
like the O is the fattest letter. T is the thinnest, one of the thinnest letters.
Bringing you all the most important news.
And James,
every week.
James, F is in the middle, just hanging out. Like, what?
I know.
On there?
F that F. It's got no business. No business at all doing that. Oh, dear. All right, well, this will probably run a little bit. I imagine this will attract some attention when the story goes live, which it already has now, if you're listening to it. And we'll have to see if anything comes from it. But I think you're right. It's like, in as much as this has clearly come because there's been a few headlines recently and someone's gone, oh, better have a look at that. But it's going to be difficult to point out what's aimed at kids and what isn't. Because, like you say, bronies abide, don't they? Bronies all over the place.
Well, yeah.
I'm going to admit this on a podcast now. I watched an episode of My Little Pony.
Good for you.
No, not good for
good
me.
Good for you. No, good for you. Stand up. Be proud, you weirdo.
You freak. Yes, grow up. No, because I wanted to see what it was. Because I remember it, I had a sister, and I remember the show from when I was a kid, when she was a kid, rather. And I wanted to see how it moved on. And I watched it. And in defense of My Little Pony, the show is about 20 times better than the one I remember as a kid. It's all ironic and like well written and well animated and stuff. It's bizarre.
I've seen it. It's I'm kind of joking, really. Like it's apparently a lot of the writing team are stand up comics.
Oh really?
Yeah. Like I can't remember what the podcast was. I think it was Stop Podcasting Yourself. They had one of the writers on board, and he's like an ex stand up comic from Canada. Like it's. Look, I don't watch it, but I've seen it, and it's like, yeah, all right, fair enough. Like, I can see why people enjoy this.
There's nothing wrong with you liking watching it, James, as long as you weren't too into it, let's say.
Why did you have to go there?
We were all thinking it, come on.
No one was thinking it.
Yeah, everyone was.
I bet our listeners were thinking it.
Yeah, all of our listeners are the kind
Dirty
of people.
Dirty James, they're all thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. They're sort of thinking, watch out, Star Twinkle. James is just around the, just around the corner.
Anyway, moving on to slightly less gross things. You might have been aware of XCOM, Enemy Unknown. That there strategy type game that existed back in 1994 on the Amiga, but has since been updated and released on PCs and consoles to much critical acclaim. The interesting thing about this is that the guys behind it, specifically the lead dude Jake Solomon, has decided to bring it to iOS. But not in a kind of stripped down little mini game style companion app thing. They're actually taking the entire XCOM Enemy Unknown experience, the full game, all 20 gigs of it, and they're dumping it onto an iPad. Now, obviously, they're going to have to do a few things to tweak it to get it on there. So what they're doing is they're de-resing some of the visuals. They are taking out a couple of the maps. There were quite a few in the original game, but they've done it so that you can still play through an entire game without repeating any of the maps once. So there's still enough in there to make it valid. But apart from those two things, every game mechanic still exists within the game. It's, as he describes it, parity across the platforms. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for this because I kind of wanted to play XCOM, and I was sorely tempted to buy it when it originally came out. I didn't play much of the original despite being an Amiga kid because I wasn't the hugest strategy game guy, but it's got such good reviews and stuff like that. Specifically, I'm interested in they're bringing a full game, full proper actual game, and not some old port. We've seen lots of things where they, I don't know, bring Crazy Taxi or something over because it's a 10-year-old game and that's easy. This is a full modern game. And the thing that they've said is that they would be open to the idea of doing this again. This is kind of the first time someone's taken a really, really big modern release and dumped it in its full form onto iOS. Do we think this is a good thing? Or is iOS not the place for this kind of gigantic full PC game?
I am so surprised that strategy on, especially iPad, has not been much, much bigger. Like, there's been a few independent companies that have been doing bits and pieces, and, you know, sort of strategy games without a license to them or any sort of pedigree. And some of them are pretty damn good. But, you know, when Firaxis put out Civilization Revolution, I was just like, yes, this is brilliant. This is fantastic. This is exactly what I need. You know, and turn-based stuff works so well because, you know, you've got this beautiful input of, you know, a large screen which you're directly moving troops around.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all of that. And even if there is some sort of, you know, slight fluffing or something, you know, with the controls on, let's say, an iPhone or something like that, it's turn-based. It's not like you're against the clock. And that's where strategy games are on, let's say, home console have always failed. You know, real-time strategy games have always failed because you simply can't move around the screen and make the actions that you want quick enough.
Mm.
But when it's turn-based stuff, that totally works. I'm so excited for them to be bringing this over to the iPad. Now, that being said, I won't play it because I don't like strategy games. I'm so excited for people who do like strategy games because it's a great game.
Jake Solomon, the guy lead dev behind it, has gotten really excited. I spoke to him earlier in the week. We did an interview. It's up on the site in full, so go and check that out. But he says he's excited because he's been playing Walking Dead. He plays Minecraft Pocket Edition on the tablet. And he says he'd play anything, everything, if developers would actually put full-size, long, you know, big games onto tablets. He says he would be in heaven and that would game even more than before because he's got his iPad wherever he would go. And you're right in that it is perfectly suited for the strategy genre. The touchscreen works brilliantly. And I asked him, like, you know, what have you had to change? And they've, like, basically said pretty much nothing because you can just point your troops where you want to go and click and drag and it's nice and easy. Obviously, there are some UI tweaks they've done to make it, you know, suit the touchscreen commands and everything. But the actual mechanics have remained absolutely identical. Now, Keith, you're a kind of strategy sort of fan, aren't you?
Yeah, this is probably a bit hardcore for me, but I agree with Pete in that kind of the iPad is made. If any touchscreen platform is made for this kind of thing, then it's the iPad, really.
Mm.
So you kind of would imagine. I don't know. It all comes down to where people use these things, doesn't it? I think iPads tend to stay at home more than iPhones, which means they should be better for these games where you sit down for a bit longer.
Yeah, that's true.
And give it your full attention. But I suppose a lot of people would think, well, if I'm at home, why don't I just have it on the PC? Rather than, you know, that was my argument slightly against The Walking Dead on iOS, in that it was better on 360 for me. And considering I was playing it at home anyway, it's not the kind of game that I particularly want to play while sitting on the bus. Not that I use public transport, but then I would just play it on the console because it's right there.
Yeah. I tend to bring the iPad with me quite a lot, actually. Like, if I ever go and stay somewhere, rather than bringing in a laptop necessarily,
I live in the north. You can't leave the house with expensive things because you'll get wrong.
You have to hide them under a big, really tatty-looking trench coat and shuffle along the street.
Or you just don't leave the house. You know.
Oh, yeah, that works too, I suppose. How do you get all these illnesses if you don't leave the house? Surely you must go out.
I just hang around with the homeless people.
Fair enough. Well done, you.
Hang around.
The interesting part of this is that, A, because they're keeping the game almost exactly the same, they are not introducing any free-to-play elements. They're not introducing any in-app purchases, anything like that. They're keeping the premium model, and it's going to be, air quotes, a premium price. The way they've put that forward is like, we're not talking premium as in 69p or 199. It's going to be more expensive, we think, than the other ones. Like, because it's the full game, you're probably going to... We're maybe talking Square Enix territory in terms of pricing.
Good.
Which, yeah, if Square Enix are charging that, like, sort of 10 quid, 15 quid for games that are 10, 15 years old, then a brand new game that you currently retails for 30, 40 pounds, and, you know, if they sell it for... I'm sure it won't be 30 or 40, but if they sell it for a decent price, that'll be fair enough. The other thing is that if this goes well, if this works as a model, or as in if people are prepared to pay this much for a full game, then they're considering doing more. Specifically, I was like, you mentioned Civ Revolution. I was like, so, you know, if this works, Civilization 5 on the iPad in its full form? And he was like, yeah, we'd be up for it. So if this works, then you could start seeing more full PC titles and console titles appearing on your iPad. I know. Well, it's quite exciting because we've always said that games work best when they're tailored to their platform. So there is an argument for saying that this shouldn't work. You can't just port a PC experience to an iPhone or whatever and expect it to work the same. But there are certain games that definitely will, specifically strategy games.
Yeah, I mean, when people say games work best when they are tailored to their platform, I think platform is actually shorthand for a very specific type of input. And actually, the iPad is very close to being a mouse, you know, like the actual iPad screen.
Well, one can easily be sort of swapped out for
the other. Like on a laptop, you've got a trackpad. It's essentially the same thing, you know. So I think I do think that this is the one of the rare cases where actually this will be probably just as good, if not a little bit better. I know. Do you know what? I think it could be better because I don't have to sit on my horrible hard office chair. I can sit on my nice couch.
You know what? That is really one of the reasons that holds me back. I've got obviously my office from where I do this podcast from and work and all that other stuff, and occasionally sorted things that I wouldn't want anyone else to see. But the
webcam, honestly.
That was distorted, so we couldn't quite hear what you said there, but I'll just assume it was lewd and insulting.
It's about My Little Ponies.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, it kind of puts me off doing lots of gaming in here. My PC is capable of doing gaming. I've got a relatively decent graphics card, but like I've got all the consoles in the other room, and I've got a sofa, and it's all comfy, and it's got a big TV and that, and that kind of puts me off. So, but you're right. If I could just do XCOM from my iPad or whatever, I think I'm up for it. I want to see what they charge for it, but if it's even close to reasonable, I will be getting it because I think it's kind of cool.
Get it.
Get it. Well, speaking of anticipated games, we've been looking forward to Star Command for a while.
Yep.
Star Command being the Kickstarter project, one of the reasonably early ones. It wasn't the one that completely kicked the whole thing off. That was like Double Fine Adventure was really publicized it. But it's been in development since like 2011. And it was popular because it's kind of a retro pixel art strategy game set in space where you're kind of recreating like a Starship Enterprise vibe where you're captain of the ship, and they pitched it as this big thing where you'll be able to battle ships from all across the ages and you'll be able to fight off enemy fleets and micromanage your ship and your crew and do all this crazy stuff. It was all a big old Kickstarter pitch they listed out, and it did very well on Kickstarter and got lots of backing, and it's been delayed numerous times. They said it would come out, you know, end of 2011, then 2012, and now finally it's been submitted to Apple as of now, which was cause for much rejoicing across the boards until they turned around and said, specifically War Balloon's Jordan Coombs said, Star Command is probably only 30% of the studio's original vision.
Oh god, brilliant.
So the idea that they were going to have loads of ships for multiple eras, that's not happening.
Yeah.
That there was going to be research, that's not happening either. The ability to beam onto other ships and planets, nope, that's not happening either. Civilization-style diplomacy engine, nah, none of that. So,
Have I ever talked about Kickstarter before and my theory that when people get your money, they can go, we've got your money and we're making the game that we want to make?
You may have mentioned it.
Have I? Because I don't feel like I've said it loud enough.
Well, here beginneth the Kickstarter kickback. Because we've all been waiting for it. This is going to be the bit, I reckon, where everyone turns around, because now projects are starting to be delivered. These projects that have been ideas up until now that we've thrown money at are coming to term, and they're going to be released onto the App Store. And you know what? They're not going to be the games that we wanted them to be. Or, more importantly, that we were told they were going to be.
Now, and also, but this is the thing, isn't it? They are not the games that we wanted them to be. They were, when people paid money for them, they were in a state where they might be what we wanted them to be.
Yes.
And that's the difference, isn't it?
Mm.
But this is the reason why people are getting upset about this sort of stuff, because they've immediately got more investment in a product when somebody rocks up and says, like, I could come up to you and say, you know what, James, I'm going to make you a chocolate cake and it's going to have fudge topping and I'm going to serve it with some ice cream. And then when I eventually turn up to your house and I've got a poo in a bag, Like, and I, you know, I can say, well, it's brown.
This is why I don't invite you over for dinner.
You got to stop doing that.
Yeah, I know. Well,
but, you know, like, now, I should say, I'm not suggesting that Star Command is a poo in a bag.
You're drawing an unfair comparison there.
I'm sure it's actually probably quite, and I've heard rumours that it's pretty good. But, you know, like, that's ultimately the extreme example of something that could happen in the future.
Well, their argument, or the defence they've put forward, is that once they got into making it, they realised that all the things they'd pledged, they basically turned around and went, well, as it turns out, Star Command could never have been all of these things. This is me quoting. But we feel like we got to the core of the idea.
Right.
So the specifics didn't quite manage those, but the idea remains true. Now, we have spoken about this in the past. You're absolutely right. And when they put up those Kickstarter projects, when the synopsis of the game that they're planning to create gets put up, it's by no means a promise. It never is a promise. And people who treat it as a promise are going to be disappointed, as we are now starting to see. They've had some slightly negative reactions from some people online who gave them their money and were looking forward to doing the research and doing the transportation between planets and all that. We actually put the question out to our listeners. Peter, what was the question itself?
The question was, Kickstarter-funded title Star Command is only 30% of the original vision. Have backers been duped? Let Ooh. Us know and win internet glory.
But you may have oversold that slightly.
I'm marketing internet glory, trademark, okay, as an official... It's an exclusive Pocket Gamer prize.
Will it be like Nectar Points or something?
Sort of, except for they have literally no monetary value.
Oh, fantastic. Those are the best points.
So... I think these are the best ones. At Posh, which I think is brilliant. Okay. Great Twitter name there. Just says, yeah. So that's good. thanks, At Posh. Good talk. At Desert Eagle Pwn, and Desert, yeah, I don't know what that is. He says, people need to be aware that developers don't always get exactly what they hope for. Crowdfunding is a risk. Sorry, backers.
That's true. It's what we've sort of been saying, yeah.
And our friends at Glitch Games, who try and muscle in on all of these conversations, and we'd love for it.
This isn't their first appearance, is it?
This is not. This is like their third. And one day I'm going to start reading these out, but I quite like them. So it says, less duped and more reminded of what the term risk means, i.e. it doesn't mean pre-order.
Yeah, like Keith has said before, and I think you as well, the whole thing isn't a promise, is it? It's just a, this is what we hope to do. And could you give us money to help us try to realize these glorious ideas? And as we're learning, swiftly learning, sometimes those ideas, they don't come to fruition. Is this the first, like, nail in the coffin of the whole Kickstarter optimism thing?
There's what Schaefer's working on, and then there's what Charles Cecil's working on. And if the next two go downhill, I think you're going to...
Well, there's Molyneux as well, which is surely ripe for us some disappointment from certain people.
Yeah, I'll be disappointed if I'm not disappointed by Molyneux.
Exactly.
I only pledge money for him to let me down. That's what he says. That's the only one you've actually contributed towards is the Charles Cecil one, isn't it? You put money towards Broken Sword, Keith.
Me, yeah. That's the only one I've ever done.
What if it's not any good?
There's no chance of that. No chance of that. They've never done a bad Broken Sword. Even the bad ones are good.
So. Really?
We'll hold you to that.
Yeah. I love number three. I'm the only one who does love number three.
You like number three?
Right,
good.
So it's going to be fine. But that's the thing, you know, it's always a risk, isn't it? Whatever you do, you buy that sandwich in a shop and the cheese is slightly off. Do you go back? Most people don't.
Yeah. I suppose, you know, to look on the flip side of it, if you walk into any old, you know, bricks and mortar retail store, because apparently they still exist.
What are those, Peter?
I know they do exist.
I haven't left the house in a month.
You go into these empty malls, and an old wizened man says,
"Yeah, it's like Dawn of the Dead.
Can I get your insurance on this?" and basically, like, you know, if you go in and look through any old games and CDs and DVDs and whatever, you know, when you put your money down, like, I guess ultimately you can still be disappointed by it. You know, if you go in and see something and go, that looks all right, and then, you know, it turns out that it's not the game that you thought it was going to be, then that's roughly the same sort of experience.
Well, I suppose the difference would be if, like, the back of the box says this is a FPS shooter set in, like, 1940s Berlin in which it's you aliens, and you open it up and it's My Little Pony, and Friendship is awesome.
Friendship is awesome.
Because that's a bit of a misleading box.
Yeah, that's true, I suppose. I mean, I guess is it cold comfort for the people who've kickstarted it that it turns out that it's probably going to be a pretty good game anyway, but it's not the good game that you wanted in the future, like that you actually sort of put the money down for?
It's like the horse meat, isn't it? We've all been eating horse meat, but we've all probably had some really nice ready meals that have had horse meat in. But it's just the fact that we didn't know. It's that, you know.
I've decided to eat ready meals because they're gross.
Right. He doesn't remember. He's still probably got you in somewhere. You know, you bought a carrot and actually it was a horse. It's just one of those.
I mistook a carrot for a horse. That doesn't.
That's the irony.
People don't like being lied to, do they? Especially if when they're being asked to pay up before it's even come out. Mm. So there will be, I'm sure there will be some people, even if it turns out to be a 10 out of 10, you know.
Yeah, they'll still complain. But we've said it before, buyer beware with this thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I wouldn't go so far as to say that this is War Balloon sort of lying. I don't think that they set out and went, oh yeah, it's going to be amazing, and then went, ha, ha, ha.
No, not at all. I think they were they perhaps shot for the moon and didn't and came up short.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like you say, we hope that the game actually is going to turn out pretty good anyway, even if it's not the game we all hoped for. Previews are promising. We've got one up on the site. Go and have a look. And when it does come out, whether you've pledged money or not, you can have a look and pay your money and take your chance then. As for other Kickstarter projects, we're just going to have to see how they turn out, because I, you know, can't help but feel at some point the tide will turn on this whole Kickstarter thing. We've had the big boom, and I'm just waiting for the whole thing the shine to wear off and people to start realizing that it's perhaps not necessarily what it's cracked up to be.
Been saying it for a long time.
Nostradamus over here has been banging on about it for ages, as indeed has Peter. So, yeah, if you've been listening to us for a while, you'll be well ahead of the curve on this, you cynical b****s. Okay, let's talk about games that are actually out now then. Over on this week's new releases. First up on this week's new releases, we have a pixel art platformer from Everplay Interactive. It's called Lumberjacked. It's about a lumberjack. And what he has to do is trundle along big foresty environments, jumping onto platforms, avoiding spikes, and chasing little thieving beavers.
Okay.
Well, it's true. That's the synopsis. That's what they do. Apparently, bunch of beavers, they've come in, they've stolen this bloke's wood.
Yeah.
Yep.
Go on. Continue.
Yeah, they've stolen his wood, and he's very angry because he needs his wood for chopping.
Yep.
And so he has to then chase down these thieving beavers. He does this by bundling along a bunch of side-scrolling 2D environments. It's kind of a time-based speed run style game. So not only do you have to get to the end of the level, you have to do it as quickly as humanly possible. You have to avoid spinning things, buzz saws, all that stuff that's associated with being a lumberjack, I guess. Wood, the great outdoors, checked shirts, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
Although everyone's wearing those now, aren't they? It's lumberjack chic.
People in our industry are.
that's true.
Don't think anybody else is.
No, they were just looking at him going, what? He's not got an axe or anything. This is ridiculous. There's a 3-star rating system, obviously, because it's a mobile game. Apparently it's pretty tough, but is good. We've given it a silver rating, and our man Harry thought it was jolly good fun. It looks good too. It's similar in style and look to those Ravenous Games games. League of Evil and that lot. That's out right now. I think it's 69p 99 cents. I'm just going to say it is. I'm not even going to click it. I'm going to shoot from the hip and say that's 69p.
You would do your job, James. That's...
I don't know. Because I'm the only person who writes anything down for these podcasts.
I don't know what you mean.
So what have you got next? Oh, this is a good one. Gemini Rue. Have you got any points and clickers in the house? Any fans?
I like point and clicks, but only when they're funny.
Oh, right. You need, unless it's got Guybrush Threepwood in, you're not interested. Okay. Gemini Rue, which was originally a PC-based point-and-click game. It's another one of those film noir-style doodads. It follows a kind of parallel narrative thing where you've got two stories going on. Not unlike that new Tim Schafer thing, Broken Age, which has got two stories. This one has, on the one hand, a detective on the planet called Barracus, in which he has to wander around looking for his brother Daniel in some kind of film noir, always raining neon landscape. On the other hand, you've got a dude called Delta 6, who is a lab rat in a mysterious floating prison called Center 7. And the idea is you have to form alliances with the other prisoners and then try and get out of this dystopian hellhole. Our man, Mark Brown, is a big fan of these. We reviewed it, we gave it a gold award, and says it's wicked.
It's wicked.
Yeah, it's wicked. It's on the pricier side. It's £2.49, but you are getting a full-blown PC game. And it's point-and-click, like we've been saying, the ideal thing, perfectly suited to iPhones and iPads. And apparently it's great.
£2.46? What did you say?
£2.49.
I was going to say that's a bit of a strange price. Why have I got 46 in my head?
That's the New Zealand prices are kind of weird.
$2.46.
Well, the New Zealand ones are like $5.19 and all that. We have the big conversion chart. Yes, true. Look at the conversion charts. New Zealand have some strange pricings.
But their water goes down the wrong way. So
is that true?
It's all going to be.
People told me that isn't true.
Well, I'd like to believe it's true.
The Simpsons told me it was true.
Yeah.
There's only one way to find out.
Road trip!
Road trip!
Hot down there, isn't it?
It is.
My God. So what, it turns out that it doesn't go round the other way. It goes straight up.
Yeah.
We flush the toilet, we all expect it, and it's just like, bam, straight into my face like that.
And that man who made Lord of the Rings, he was nice, wasn't he?
Oh, he's a lovely chap. But I told him that The Hobbit shouldn't be three movies, because it's too long. And he's just, you know, he's flogging his horse there. Anyway, back to new releases. Dungeon Hunter 4. What is that Gameloft dungeon crawly Diablo-esque game? Or at least it was until the third installment. The first two games were very much in the vein of Diablo, in which top-down, isometric, run around, exploring, collecting, grinding mainly. And then on the third one, they turned it into sort of a multiplayer arena brawler, which was met with some hostility initially. People were quite narked about that. It was also the first one to go freemium, so there was a bit of complaining that went on there. This time, however, they have released the fourth episode, and it is kind of an amalgamation of the two. It goes back to the old dungeon crawling roots, so a single-player campaign in which you're grinding through as many dungeons as you can possibly handle. But there are also some PvP areas and a bit of arena battling if you fancy it.
I've played this.
Oh, Dungeon Hunter 4?
Yeah.
Check you out. Well, like early or something.
GDC, yeah.
What did you think?
Well, I'm not a huge fan of these games because you kind of just walk around, hack, 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 walk around. Mm. But that said, it looks very nice. The lighting of it is very nice. It played all right. I was kind of enjoying it.
Okay.
And, there's lots of get this item and put it together to make this thing and blah, blah, blah.
Well, we've done a big old breakdown of it because we haven't reviewed it yet.
It's a bit lazy.
Because it only came out today. We have done is kind of broken down all the in-app purchases because it's a very, very in-app purchase-heavy game. And so we've kind of done a big old list, big old inventory of what you can and can't buy. The list of what you can buy is comprised of everything. And the other list doesn't exist. Because you can just buy everything. So certain things like you can buy the best weapon in the game for the first level.
You can buy things like, game over, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, you want to live a little bit longer. Yeah. Doesn't matter if you completely unbalance the game.
We are living in the future.
Yeah, and it sucks. Well,
that doesn't happen in real life.
I can't level up in real life.
Really?
Well, no.
Yes, you can.
Every time I kill someone and try and loot their corpse, I wind up in, like, the slammer.
You're doing levelling wrong. Levelling in real life is stuff like the other day, for example, I made a spaghetti bolognese from scratch. Bing! That's a level up.
Is it?
Yeah, of course it is.
According to whom?
According to me, because I didn't know how to do cooking before all
when
that.
When you say scratch, did you kill the horse first? And then?
Yeah, I killed the horse.
Grind it up.
I went to Italy. How do they make pasta? Anyway. But no, I did. And like...
It grows on trees, doesn't it? It grows on trees.
Yeah, that's right. Spaghetti just hangs down from the branches. So, that is real life power leveling.
Okay.
It's not killing people, James. You're doing that wrong. Very wrong.
Well, how am I supposed to know? As we all know, video games are an incredibly strong influence on the weak-minded, and all of man's ills and every hideous murder ever caused was prompted by a video game. So I'm just a victim of my circumstances. That's my defense that I use every time I get arrested for murdering hobos and trying to steal their gold. They never have any.
Hobos?
Yeah. Hobo gold. I'm going for the wrong targets, I suppose. But yeah. Whatever. Well, you can download Dungeon Hunter 4 now for free if you want to level up without killing innocents. But each to their own. Moving on. Blue Toad Murder Files has come to iOS. Here's another PC point-and-click game that has made its way over to iOS. Actually, it's not PC. I'm lying. It was a PS3 release originally, I think.
PS3 and then PC.
Yeah, okay, there you go. It is kind of like an interactive Miss Marple.
Yeah.
It basically is. I've actually played this one. It channels all those kind of Poirot and Midsummer Murders and all those very quaint British
mysteries. Do not compare Marple to Midsummer Murders. I'll have to lose my temper with you.
Which is the superior? I always forget.
Oh my god, no, if you haven't
watched... Well, I don't watch ITV murder dramas, sorry.
Not ITV's Marple, that doesn't count. No, we're talking about the original Marple.
There's more than one Marple.
Of course there is.
That's the name of one of the mysteries.
Oh dear.
Marple's brilliant, is it?
Yeah, you've never seen Miss Marple.
I probably have, but I suspect I was probably doing something really violent with the other hand.
What were we talking about?
Tell you what I did watch. I watched Morse. My brother was a Morse fan, so I have seen that. I have seen some of the old murder mysteries and Diagnosis Murder.
No, you see, no.
Come on, Diagnosis Murder!
Is Diagnosis Murder the one with Dick Van Dyke?
Yes, roller skating around solving crimes with his enormously jawed son. Yeah, come on, brilliant. What's not to like?
Yeah, classic.
Solid gold, that is. Although he never does his Mary Poppins bit, and I'm always disappointed. Anyway, the game, Blue Toad Murder Files, is based around these things. So it's very, very quaint. You have to solve loads of little mini sort of logic puzzles on the way to discovery. Who's committed the bad murder? There are 6 episodes in the series originally. If you buy this game, which costs, I think, £1.99, $2.99, you get the first 3 episodes, which you can play in any order you want. And they are currently working on the 4th episode and presumably 5th and 6th, which I imagine they'll add as possibly in-app purchases later. They might give it away for free, which would be very generous, but I somehow doubt it. But the first 3 episodes all come bundled together as one. And if you bought the original game on the PS3, I think it was like, £3 or £4 per episode. So really, you're getting a bargain. £1.99 for the first 3. And all the reviews were strong, and I played it, and it's actually quite sort of fun. It's very family-friendly. Don't expect any gore or anything like that. But it is fun, and the logic puzzles are, entertaining and stuff. And it's good. If you like point-and-click, good, clean point-and-click fun.
I wonder how they'll do the multiplayer.
Yeah, I know. I don't think it is in this version. I think perhaps it might be added later. I'm pretty sure it's just single-player. They are working on further updates for it, so who knows, might turn up a little bit later on. You can get that for £1.99, $2.99 right now. Did you guys remember us talking about The Drowning? Which, if you don't remember, is that one where they've introduced the new way to control first-person shooters?
Yes.
Going to revolutionise the first-person shooter on iPad by making it slightly less crap.
I've seen this as well.
You saw it in action, because I know John Jordan played it.
I didn't get to play it, but I saw Ben Cousins, who's in charge of it, give a talk, and he played it for about 10 minutes.
Okay.
It was interesting, yeah.
This is Ben Cousins' ex-Battlefield dude.
Yeah.
He's behind it, and they decided that the control systems for first-person shooters on iOS are rubbish, which I agree with, And so they're looking for a way to change that. And their solution was to do a one-handed control system whereby you... It's kind of a merger of point-and-click mechanics with standard gesture commands.
I didn't quite understand it until I saw it working, but you kind of... If you want to shoot, you put both your fingers on the screen and it kind of shoots in the middle of where your fingers are, which makes sense. And then anywhere you want to walk, you literally just tap it and he walks there.
So but, but it's not... You haven't got free motion with your movement, though, do you?
You do, yeah. It's not on rails. But essentially, I mean, he was comparing some people, he said, kind of press on the ground way off and just let the guy walk there, whereas he, as he was playing it, was literally tapping each step. Mm. So he was kind of... So you can literally move anywhere you see, but it's just a different way of inputting it. And if you happen to be surrounded by a load of people and you just want to press, you need to run away far off, you can just press that and he'll go. But he was doing it with one hand, shooting and tapping the screen to move around. And actually, I was quite convinced by it. I imagine it's probably easy to play on iPad because you'll see more.
Available on iPad.
I was going to say the iPhone one would be rather crowded.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was. I kind of went into it thinking, yeah, I'm not sure about this, but it does make a sort of sense. And he was, I mean, actually, you know, you would expect him to be good at it because he made it, but it was quite convincing, the idea of just using this one hand to do it.
I'm curious to see it up and running. Mark's been having a go at it today. He says it's interesting. It's still a bit fiddly, apparently, but...
It doesn't look quite as pretty as I thought it would, though. That's from the screenshots they released when it was first announced. It looked like it was, you know, going to be one of the best-looking games, and it was a bit... I don't know, it wasn't ropey, but it was a bit more jaggedy and...
Oh, really?
Yeah, than I was expecting. Yeah, but, I mean, it's an interesting idea in that it isn't just... The control scheme they've kind of cut down. They kind of cut down all the cutscenes, all of the... He was basically suggesting that literally people don't play mobile games to sit for 20 minutes watching a cutscene. And you've got to, from every element that you make in a game, you've got to target it so that someone could literally play it for 2 minutes.
Right.
And then, you know, pop off somewhere else. So, I mean, the opening, there is a little opening cutscene, but it literally lasts like 15 seconds. It's just kind of...
And then you're off. Well, yeah. You're fighting off a bunch of zombies. I should probably say that this game has been soft launched in New Zealand and Australia. So it's available in certain areas, but it's not available in the UK or Europe or the US yet.
We have to fly Mark out to Australia to play it.
Well, no, because if you go onto the site, you can actually find guides on how to make iOS accounts for different territories.
How to become an Australian.
Exactly. So, yes, it's the Antipodean cheat. Up, down, up, down, left, right.
A-star.
Exactly. That's easy. And same thing for US accounts as well. If you want to get a US account, there's a little simple process you can go through when you set up an account. So if you wanted to, you can technically play this right now. It's also free. It's a freemium game. I know, shocking. And indeed, awe. I'm curious. I mean, my thing with the first-person shooters is... It's a problem that everybody's trying to solve, but I think it's a problem they shouldn't really bother solving because I don't think it needs to be on iPad anyway.
Yeah, but that's not what the people with the money are thinking, is it? It's Call of Duty sells well. We should do another one of them.
Ours. Yeah, it's true, and I'm sure they do. And Modern Warfare, you know, series does well within its own genre, within its own field. It does very well, but. First-person shooters don't belong on iPhone. They just don't.
Whoa.
They don't. It's always going to be a compromise, and it's always a bit ropey. It's just
People did used to say that about consoles, though, didn't they? Used to say,
you can't do a platformer in 3D.
Yeah, but if you're Sega, you they can't. Were wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
If you happen to be one of our New Zealand or Australian listeners, you can grab it right now, or if you want to go and get an account and... Find the guides on the site and you can do it. Otherwise, it'll be out relatively soon, I would think. Soft launch usually indicates a couple of months, and then they'll mess about with it for a bit, and then it'll come out over a year.
Tangent, what country do you think is the most interesting country that our listeners are from? Like, do you reckon we've got a listener in Qatar? Or do you think we might have a listener in... I don't know.
Why is Qatar interesting?
Kenya, or... Well, I don't know, because Qatar is, well, first of all, because that's the first country that came to mind. But also, but do you think we've maybe got a listener who lives in, like, the middle of Alaska in, like, the snow in an igloo?
Or, we're their only contact with the outside world.
Yeah.
They've got one really, really cold laptop from which they do all their communication.
Yeah.
And it only goes to Pocket Gamer.
I can answer that.
Go on.
No.
Oh, I don't think so. I reckon we've got some listeners in some really weird places. Sorry, not weird. Not weird. Your country's not weird. Your strange laws and customs aren't strange.
No, it's all relative, isn't it? Because to us British people, all these far-off foreign lands seem terribly exotic and exciting. Whereas to everyone else, it's just home.
Well, they were exotic and exciting until we invaded them. But, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And then we messed things up, didn't we?
Then we made them dull and boring.
Sorry about that, the world.
Yeah, our bad.
Bad.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of this imperialist tract. Let's move on to the games that we've been playing this week.
Oh, yes, please.
What we've been playing!
I have a confession to make.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really played much this week, right? And usually I make a point of, like, highlighting anyone who hasn't and hanging them out to dry a bit. Normally Keith, I'll be honest. That probably won't happen this week, will it, Keith? But in this case, I have started playing something literally today, and it's been something that I've been waiting to start for a long, long time. I have started playing The Room.
Woo!
Finally. Woo! Unfortunately, it's a slight conflict of interest because I've started playing it on Android.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, but I've got an iPad and I totally would play on iPad, but it doesn't run on my iPad because it's old and knackered and it runs on history books. So I can't use it, but it does work on my Galaxy S2, you see. So
S2.
That's the better one. The S3 is too big. And the S4 is even bigger. It's mad.
Yeah, the S4 is like a Lexus. Yeah,
it's ridiculous. So the car Lexus as well, not the phone. So I've got the S2, which is a sensible size. But it runs on that. So I've downloaded it and I've started playing it. I could talk about it now, but I've only really done a little bit and I don't want to pass judgment too early. So next week I will bring you, finally, my views on The Room, which I know you've all been on tenterhooks. obviously. I'm not going to talk about much this week. What about you, Keith?
Well, you know, I've been playing a game this week.
Oh, have you?
But I've been playing Kingdom Rush, which I play every week, so...
Is it still good?
Yeah, it is good. It is good.
That's awesome. That is so good. Yeah.
I was playing it while you two were waffling on before, so...
Oh, nice. Our words are so valued.
Yeah, but I've not played anything new, well, you know, apart from the odd thing aggressively with one hand.
Well, they do call me the trendsetter, amongst other things. Keith, you and I have failed this week a little bit.
Oh, well.
But I think someone's going to swoop in and save the whole situation for
us. Funny if he doesn't.
It will be funny if he doesn't. Well, I've been doing this with my hand. No. Peter Willington, I understand you've been playing enough games for the three of us.
Yes, because I've played two games.
Okay.
So, yeah, I want to talk about one of them pretty quickly and one of them in a little bit more depth, so look forward to that. First one is the little bit less time chatty one. It's called RRBBYY.
That's not a name.
It sort of is a name, but it's not a word.
It's about colours.
It certainly is.
Ah, I thought so.
So, RRBBYY, or Ruby, as I'm going to call it.
Okay, yeah, that works.
It's a game in which you have a square, and it can be red or blue or yellow. And there are other squares that come down the screen, much like you might see in, say, Tetris, that are also red or blue or yellow. The idea is a sort of polarity switching system, like an Ikaruga or a... What was the other one? What's the one that gives me all the indie chops? Is it Silhouette Mirage?
All the indie chops. Well, there's a new one called Repulse, with that Wipeout clone thing. That's been out, has just come out on iOS and Android.
Yeah, all right, let's go with that then. So it's a bit like that. in so much as if you're the same colour as the block that you touch with the square that you can control with your finger, then you get a point. And if you don't, then you knock into it and you lose points and you lose health, essentially.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So if you run to the end, brilliant new mechanic. If you run out of points, you lose.
I can see that catching on.
Yeah, exactly. And then there are some extra sort of special items that turn up every once in a while, but I never really understood what any of those did. It certainly did do something, but it some of the squares would explode, or I would get hurt by stuff, or what I ended up doing was just avoiding these little. I think one of them was like a little black square or something like that, and I just went, oh, sorry, I can't bother. I'll just get out of the way. It's a really interesting and idea for a game, and it certainly has the potential to be quite cool. And I really like the soundtrack. Go and have a listen to it. Go and check out the trailer for it. There's a trailer on YouTube for RRBBYY. It's worth listening to. It's got this potential to be a really interesting game. It's just that it doesn't really do enough or explain enough of its systems for you to be fully aware of what it wants you to do. So, for example, to change the colour of your square, you tap on the screen where the square is, and it changes colour, and then you can move it. And then when you take your finger off, you just aren't moving it anymore. But then you go to put your finger back on again, and the colour changes. So you've got to keep in mind that it goes red, and then blue, and then yellow, and then red, and then blue, and then yellow. Because your finger's so fat, or at least my finger is, when you go, oh, it's a red one, I'm going to move the red one so I can pick up the red squares. But you touch it, you've completely forgotten that it's turned to blue. And so you move it there and then you die. And it plays with your mind a little bit in that way. It's a really good start of a game.
Right.
And I really want them to sort of update it and keep going with it, because I think there's the potential for a really, really excellent title there. It's just not quite there. Like RRBBYY2, I think that's going to be awesome if it gets made. But this one is more of a sort of curiosity, I suppose. And the one that I'm actually wanting to talk about is Motor World Car Factory, the best video game ever made.
Wow.
It's pretty good. It's by a company called OBB. And you business...
as in OBaby.
Oh, baby.
By OBB Socialtainment, which is by Stanislav's Devarin. But he's interesting because he was one of the creative leads at Gameloft and invented the Asphalt license franchise. Like, he came up with it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he kind of moved away from there, made OBB, and it's apparently like a family-run operation. So it's his wife.
It's Manji.
Yeah, basically. And he's gone from this, you know, super high-end, I'm sure, earning poop loads of money job to being this smaller independent developer that's also working with this absolutely massive company. And he's made, they've made a game. It's about making cars, and it's a freemium game. So there's time, you start to make a game, you've got energy, and each of your workers has energy, which is in the form of donuts. And that's where it starts to get strange.
What's it called again? I want to Google this one.
Okay, it's called Motor World Car Factory.
Right, okay.
But before you look at any screens for it,
right,
let me tell you that it is a game in which you build cars, and the cars are very representative of the actual cars that they're sort of trying to mimic. You know, like there's a car that looks like a roadster, for example, you know, that sort of thing. And you can do loads of research into how your cars are going to get made and all of the extra bits and pieces that you can put into them, and how you can research Fordism, for example, so that you can have more people working on one car at once.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do CSR style drag races with people, and you can meet up with friends and all of that sort of stuff. So now if you actually look at one of the images, you'll find out that it looks like a NES game.
I can confirm this. It does look like a pixel arty NES game.
And the music is a combination of sort of ambiguously retro chiptune and when you're creating extra buildings, so for example, like an extra car parking space or a place where you can go and get upgrades for cars and you earn money automatically there, whenever they start building, this incredible orchestral score starts going dum 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 dum, like, and it gets so epic. Like, you're looking at it and you're looking at these little guys who, by the way, when you touch these little 8-bit characters and you try and move them about the screen, they've got this kind of super high pitched voice that comes out of them, and sometimes you touch them and one of them will squeak a little fart out and sort of apologize, and like, and you're in your car factory and then you'll see this guy and he's got like a little camera and he's an industrial spy doing like sabotage, and you have to touch on him and then donuts ping out of him, and then you have to,
what?
And then at midnight zombies like rush towards your car factory and you have to shoot them all, and it's
okay.
It's crazy. So I'm doing an interview with him, and I'm waiting to get these answers back. And one of my big questions to him is basically like, who is this aimed at? Like, it seems like an ultra casual game, but it's got these relatively hardcore. I suppose some of the systems, especially the research, kind of hardcore, in that there's lots of it there, and you have to like wait a lot of time, and there's a lot of strategy, and that you know, you're sort of thinking, well, do I want to make a lot of cars and make quick cash, or do I want to make a lot of buildings and make easy cash? And, you know, there is this sort of like almost realism in a sort of strange way involved in it. But then there's this sort of like 8-bit retro style to it. And some of the sound effects are intentionally long, like they're just too long. So when you collect from a building, you know, like you get a cash register sound, it'll be like ching ching.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right. But in this one, the sound effect is like 7 seconds long. So it goes ching ching, like way too long. And it's like, it's got this sort of Deadly Premonition style. I think this is deliberately a bit rubbish, so it's kind of good in that way.
Okay.
And like sometimes you'll see characters and they'll just be walking. They'll have glitched themselves out of the game. And like they'll be floating in midair, and they'll be like wandering to your car, the next job that they have to do just in the middle of the air, and then they're fine.
This is deliberate?
And I think it's deliberate, because sometimes you won't be able to read the text in the speech bubbles because these 2D sprites have gone angular to the camera of the game, I suppose. So they're incredibly thin. And you can't see what they're actually saying until you sort of like poke and move them about and so forth. It's
right.
It's bizarre, but it's because it's got these little flaws in it. It's utterly compelling. Like, you just want to see more and more and more of it. Like, it's got a mechanic in it called car breeding. And you sort of think, oh, maybe that's a bit of a translation issue. But no, it makes this little joke out of it. Like, two cars go into a garage and we don't quite know what happens, and then a little baby car comes out, and then
this game has car sexy time.
Yeah, it's really strange, and I really love it. It's it's wonderful. So the review's up on the site already. Definitely go and check that out, because it's fascinating, and it's
bonkers.
Got,
yeah,
it is bonkers, and it's got this spirit of the independent, which I really like about it, and DNA seem to be supporting it like pretty hardcore, and it's got this pedigree, so you kind of go with it. It's like, it's a little bit Miyazaki in that way. You just kind of go with the oddness, because you're like, do you know what, the rest of the game is excellent, so fair enough. Like, it's a bit strange and the sounds are a bit odd, but fine. So you know, so it's a week past the actual review thing, and I've been playing it every single day. Mm-hmm. So I think it is really, really good.
Okay. Well, it's gotten its donutty claws right into you then.
Yes. They're and sticky.
It sounds mental, and I might have a look if it's free, just to see the craziness.
You'll get it after about 20 minutes. Like, you'll get everything it's got after about 20 minutes, and if it hooks you, it hooks you. If it doesn't, you've seen a kind of interesting look.
Fair enough, then. Well, thanks for covering our asses today, because we didn't have anything.
It's fine.
But promise you, we will have the room next week, and Keith, I'm sure, will play something other than his favourite game.
No.
Maybe, possibly. No, you're playing it now, aren't you?
I'm not, actually. No, I'm not. The battery's running low. So.
Well, thank you, Peter and Keith, for joining me this week. That'll just about do it. If you want to go and find out anything about what we've been talking about today, go to the site as always. The Game of the Week is up. All those new releases we mentioned. Go vote for your favourite. And find us on Twitter, Pocket Gamer, and on Facebook as well. We will catch up with you next week for more reviews, news, and general iOS info. Thanks for listening to us this week. Bye-bye.